This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome in to the TFA Dino Show. Live edition, in fact, not even just your regular podcast version. We're live, in fact, for all of you. We've got myself, Robbie Jeffries, with Tom Corson, and we're really excited because we've got another guest. We've been doing guests building up to the rookie draft, and we've got some now that the rookie draft is over, the NFL rookie draft, and as all of your dynasty rookie drafts are going to be starting. He is the senior writer at CBS Sports. He is a regular contributor for Fantasy Football Today. He's a grill master. He's an emperor of IPAs, and he's the man of a thousand size, as I'm finding out more and more listening to his podcast with the crew over there at CBS. So you guys, Heath Cummings joining us today. Heath, welcome, welcome. How are you?
That was a very kind and generous introduction. I appreciate the man of a thousand size. Here's the thing, like on the podcast, that's become a thing that everybody likes and says, ooh, that's fun. And we're going to mark that one and save it. And they play these little clips of me sighing seven times that sound oddly erotic. But my wife hates it when I sigh, because almost every time I sigh, it's because I'm a little bit exasperated.
Sure.
And so I make that sound and she's just ready to punch me in the face because obviously I'm reacting to something she did. So it's really, I'm getting opposite training in terms of the whole Pavlov thing. Like in some areas I need to do it more, and in some areas I should probably never sigh again.
Right. Yeah. They love when you're doing it. They're making it a thing, but I think it's we've learned to know that there's a couple of tells, right? There's the exasperated Heath sigh. There's the, you're pondering something. So yeah. You have to decipher them a little bit. Tom, how are you, my man?
I'm good. I'm excited to go live. Normally I can speak the English language better when we're live as opposed to stumbling over my words when I know I can screw up. So yeah, excited to go live, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got a lot of stuff to cover. I'm really excited to have Heath jump on with us. But before we get into the fantasy and dynasty focus, and the focus for today is 2022 rookie projections, right? I think a lot of people in this space kind of look at projections every now and then, but they don't really incorporate them into how they can maybe view a range for players, right? Like, here's where I view this player is. Does that make sense for what his range is in terms of production? And so I'm excited to hear Heath's process as someone who does projections on a very baseline level. But before we get into that, we already have the first comment here. We're looking for some IPA talk. Cody Kutzer is one of the fans as well. We got to get into it because, Heath, you're known in the Dynasty community as, hey, I'm always checking out, trying to find new IPAs, and you've tried a whole bunch. I've seen the Instagram. It's a little dusty. We might have to upload it. We'll have posted in a minute, but there's been some, obviously, the grilling on there, but What's kind of a go-to or your favorite IPA?
Yeah, I resisted Instagram for several years. I still don't have a TikTok. And then I finally gave in. I said, if I'm going to do Instagram, it's just going to be beer and barbecue. And everybody's like, okay, that's fine. I did it for about 6 months. Now I've struggled to keep up with it again. But I'm going to give a three-part answer, and one of them's not actually even an IPA. first I would say, and it's what I've actually got in front of me right now, as far as the mass-produced IPAs, New Belgium is doing a fantastic job. Their Juicy Haze IPA is very good. The variants they put out of that, almost all very drinkable and good. And so of the ones that everybody can find in their local grocery store, that's probably my favorite. Right now, my favorite IPA is Florida Man from Cigar City. They're in Tampa, and you might see at your local grocery store Hi-Li or Hi-Low, which is their session now. I don't think they're all the way across the country, but they're in most of the Southeast at least. And then I'll give a short shout out to my favorite beer, which isn't even made anymore, which was Bully Porter from Boulevard. They were the brewery that turned me on to craft beer. When my son was 9 months old, we found out he had a rare disease, mastocytosis. We had never any idea what it was. Most people still don't. But we started doing a golf tournament for him every year. And back then I drank Miller High Life. Like I went and bought a 30 pack and I'd drink a 30 pack of cans. And then when that was gone, I'd go buy another 30 pack.
Yeah.
Boulevard was so helpful during that process. They were a local company in Kansas City, of putting that golf tournament on and donating stuff and donating beer for the event. And so I started drinking Boulevard and then I became a beer snob. And so I don't drink High Life anymore.
I love that as a Lawrence guy here and lived in Kansas City for a year. That's what I got in front of me. I don't know if you've heard of 80 Acres. Not as popular anymore, but that's my go-to for Boulevard.
You're in Lawrence, Kansas.
Oh, the one and only. Yeah.
So you see the Jayhawk over my shoulder too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, no. The Oatmeal Stout from Free State was one of my favorites when I lived there. Yeah, we would, that was kind of a little treat we would get, was the Oatmeal Stout from Free State.
Yeah, I don't know how long LBC's been around. I moved here in 17, but Lawrence Beer Company is kind of the big one right now, and they have Electric, a great IPA. That's my answer. It is the Electric here, a local one. And I know you can get the national ones, and Sierra Nevada has a really good one. Deschutes has an IPA pack that's fantastic. So there's a lot of good more national brands, but I'll stick with local Lawrence Electric here.
Oh, for sure. Like there's a difference I've noticed and with a couple of different breweries that we really liked when they first started. And like you're cheering for these guys to make it and either get bought out or build a national distribution channel. But the quality of the beer changes once that happens. Like it's a different kind of thing. We go from putting a fruit in the beer to we're going to put the essence of the fruit in the beer because we're making so much of it now.
Yep. Tom, what about you? More a vino guy though, right?
Yeah, vino. I like summer beers, but grapefruit IPA soap. Mm. Soap by Dr. Squatch.
Soap. Okay.
Soap. It's awesome.
Where's that found? Just in the Northeast or I haven't heard of it?
No, everywhere. On the internet. Have you heard of the internet?
Amazon. So I don't even know.
So check out Dr. Squatch. It's like all natural like soaps and stuff like that. And they have like
beer
a
soap.
Ton of yeah, they have a like a bourbon one. They have
so do you get a bud? Cold...
Huh?
Did you get a buzz?
Yeah, a little bit. Sometimes I like to take a bite out of the soap.
well, look, a bar of soap.
dirty mouth over here. So I'm gonna try and keep my mouth clean tonight. And I guess if I start cursing, I'll go have a bite of the grapefruit IPA soap. no, I usually like shandies. I don't really like hoppy stuff that much. I drink more red wines than beer because I'm old. I feel like and I don't really drink too much. So yeah,
it's good.
Yeah,
and so I kind of like hearing that. You know, we like to kick the show off with a non fancy question, you just kind of keep it light and get to learn about our guests a little bit more. So love you indulging and telling me a couple new IPAs to check out. But let's get in kind of to the meat of the show, because I know there's just a ton of questions just in general with projections and how people go about projecting. It seems like it's just this one caveat, one size fits all. And I don't think that's true. I think there's a lot of different ways you can start, whether it's with the team and figuring out how they operate, or if you want to start with the targets or the care, you know what I mean? There's a bunch of different ways to go about it. So maybe just in a 1,000-foot view, Heath, how do you start the process and what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a three-legged approach. Like, I will start out by building each team's projected volume, play volume, pass volume, run volume, based on what the staff has done in the past. And if it's a staff that we don't have any history on, then I'll just use league median from the prior year. I will generally regress what outliers have done towards the league median as well. I don't want to project... Just because a team ran 1,200 plays last year, it's very unlikely they're going to do that again. So I'll bring that back a little bit more closer to normal. And then I will kind of build out the other side of it, which is the player efficiency. In terms of, I generally look at a three-year window unless I have a reason to think last year or the 2 years before were more informative. And like that might be true with someone like Mike Evans or Chris Godwin, because 3 years ago they had Jameis Winston. The last 2 years they've had Tom Brady. Maybe use their efficiency more from the last 2 years. And then what will happen is you pair those two together and then you see like, where does this not make any sense? And a prime example of that last year was I didn't really see how Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski could all be as good as their past efficiency and the team's past like volume suggested. And the reason was because I was too low on Tom Brady. I didn't project him to be the number two quarterback in fantasy. So those guys were all as good as they might have been. But like you find those conflicts, and that's where that's one of the areas, because I do all these things to start the process, but I 100% will go to the running back page or the wide receiver page and look at how what I've done so far frames a certain player. And if that doesn't make any sense to me, then the next thing I'm going to go is do is investigate why he's so much different than where I think he should be, and maybe even tweak it.
Yeah, because I think that's the next part of my question is I think in a recent podcast you were talking about Deshaun Watson and Tom Brady, how one came over the other in the rankings. But when you looked at it, maybe you saw more safety or more variance with one player or the other. So how do you kind of take the projections and what you see, and then you put it into your rankings and you alter it a little bit based on what?
Well, that's why, like, for the most part, it's based on, I try not to project injuries. For most players, I'm going to project 17 games. Now, I made an exception to that rule last year with Will Fuller. It worked out so well that I'm going to make an exception this year with Raheem Mostert. And I'm just going to keep picking a couple of guys each year that, you know what, I'm not going to project him for 17 games. And I know like there's other people who are completely opposite on this and are projecting 15 and a half games or 16 games for players. I just don't think that I'm good enough at projecting how many games somebody's going to miss with injury to be more accurate by doing that. So I will project everyone for 17, and then I'll pull back on the guys that I think might have a little bit more injury risk. But I'm really skeptical of injury risk, period. So it's got to be guys like Fuller, like Mostert, like Dalvin Cook, who just never play a full season for me to pull back on it.
Yeah, and I think when you do everybody for 17 games, the one thing you can point back at is a point per game, average. So if everybody's on that playing field, you can kind of point to that and say, hey, listen, they might miss some time, but I'm projecting them to get about 16 and a half points a week. So,
yeah, one thing I did in my – and so I've only projected for 2 years now, but one thing I noticed, especially going to a 17th game – I thought for running backs, and I kind of looked at, you know, how many running backs play all 16 games. And then I looked back to this year. And if we look kind of at the top 25 running backs, you know, we're seeing that two or three or four are really only hitting that 17 games. And so I'm curious, like, I'm not going to be the one that's picking, okay, this one's going 13, this one's going 15. But when we're comparing the running backs to the wide receivers, I want to make sure I'm not bumping up those running backs past to a point where theoretically, most of them aren't going to play 17 games. I don't want to really project them for 17, but
that's kind of how I've seen it so far.
Well, and I think that's why projections and rankings should be tethered to each other, but not be exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Like it might be that the top seven scorers I project to be running backs, but I feel more confident that Cooper Kupp or Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase is going to be their week 16 in these running backs. And so I'm going to bump them up a little bit. I think what's interesting is like the thing that changes it is different as you go through the draft. The first couple of rounds, I'm moving the wide receivers up because I'm not as worried about what's negatively going to happen to them. But you get past round six, round seven, and I almost don't care what the median projection is. I just want to draft the guy that has the most upside, and I don't care about floor anymore. So you kind of have to negotiate it in both directions.
Yeah, it also depends on the early makeup of your team too. So if you went heavy risk early on, then you might want a little bit of a safety getting that, all right, I'm going to plug in Jarvis Landry or something like that, that wide receiver three where I know I'm going to get 12 to 15 points. I never all do right. that, but some people like to.
How do you factor in, or do you factor in, we talked about it a little bit pre-show, but Vegas totals, they're starting to come out for these rookies. And really I think that's the toughest part for me is rookies. We've never seen them at the NFL level. We've never seen them play with all these brand new players. We've seen their college tape, but do they fit into the offense the same way? Are they going to be used the same way? That's the toughest part. Does Vegas help you out at all? Or do you kind of ignore that?
I lean on Vegas quite a bit in season, because I will use over-unders and implied point totals for total team touchdown projections and then spread touchdowns out amongst the team based on that. In terms of preseason, that's not something – like I'll notice it, and I'll take note of the guys I'm higher on or lower than and maybe see if there's a – if I feel like I have a justifiable reason. I'm okay with being against the market if I know why. I don't want to be with just because my number happened to be different. But other than that, I don't use it a lot in the preseason.
I think the one interesting thing to do is track them to see, if they're going up, if they're going down, if they're staying the same. Last year we had Kyle Pitts started at 1,090 yards and dropped down to 890 or something after the opening. And then everyone smashed that. Ja'Marr Chase was another one who was over 1,000 yards and came right back down because everybody was, taking the under there, which they lost if they were taking the under for pretty much every single good rookie wide receiver last year. So we can't have that every year, but that's another thing. So just – I like to, check all of them out early, write them down so I can kind of remember where they're at, and then track that movement to see where they're at closer to the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I like that thought, Tom, because I think we see that a lot where the pendulum starts to swing. And so 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, as we get closer to the season, you can remember where it was there and just kind of take all the news in and see how much it's shifted to – hey, this is where we originally thought, and we've been swayed because he's not catching the balls in preseason, right? That was a big question with Ja'Marr Chase, the hands, right? I think that pendulum can get swayed for sometimes news that isn't really sticky. But let's
news, it's not news.
Yeah, news that's not news, exactly. There's so much of that. And we're getting ready for that season, right? We're already starting to see the highlights. Yeah. Kenneth Walker made a catch, and everyone's talking about how he can catch. So I'm ready for the highlight season to start.
Here comes the Jalen Reagor one-handed catch that's not going to matter.
I don't know.
Tom's an Eagles fan, so he's back on the Howie train, and I think that maybe that's where we pivot to, Tom, right away. So this is going to be a rookies conversation, but because this trade, I think, is so interesting in terms of projecting the wide receivers or the pass catchers in the Eagles offense, I wanted to hit this one off the top because it is draft-related with the trade. But when we talk about A.J. Brown coming to the Eagles, how he fits in with Devonta Smith, with Dallas Goedert, with the pass catchers out of the backfield. How do you work all that out? Because that's just a lot. And I've listened to a couple podcasts. It's like you should put Jalen Hurts as QB1, because of all the pass catching, right? He has to be because of all this weaponry he has around him. How do you go about managing all of those expectations?
Well, I did say that he has QB1 upside. I think I've got him at QB4 now, so I've not quite projected him that high, but I do think he has that kind of upside just because of what he does with his legs and the leap we've seen from these young quarterbacks when they've been given a stud receiver in the past. We saw it with Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. We saw it with Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think it'll be that type of leap in pass efficiency, but I do expect an improvement from Hurts, and he runs enough that I do think he has QB1 upside. The pass catchers are tough because one of the things we run into that I think is a little more sticky than maybe others is that the Eagles coaching staff's been pretty heavy on a high percentage of their targets going to tight ends and a high percentage of their targets going to running backs. And that won't work if A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith are both going to be really good for fantasy. Now, Brown's been efficient enough in Tennessee that he can do it with not quite wide receiver one volume. But I knocked him down basically almost two tiers. He was wide receiver 5 in my projections before the trade. He's wide receiver 14 right now. I still think he has just as much upside. I think the problem is if he hits that upside, it's by crushing either Devontae Smith or Dallas Goedert. And I don't know which one of those guys is going to get crushed.
Yeah, so the one thing about the tight end targets and them being heavy tight end is they ran a ton of 12 personnel because that's what they had to do because they didn't have wide receivers. We don't have Zach Ertz anymore. Before we had Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, and then we had nothing at wide receiver for a couple years there because of injuries, and then we got Devonta Smith last year, and that was pretty much it. So I think they are going to try and shift more to throwing the ball on the outside. I still have questions about Jalen Hurts' arm strength. The two quarterbacks that you mentioned in Josh Allen and Kyler both have cannons, where Hurts doesn't necessarily have that. You're going to have to manufacture some throws there to just get the ball into AJ's hand a little bit differently than, you know, Diggs or Hopkins there. But I still think it's going to be really efficient. But again, you kind of hit the nail on the head with Jalen Hurts' projection and then not having an idea about the other, you know, the skill position guys there. I think AJ Brown is obviously the safest. Devonta Smith, I have no idea where to throw him in there. Dallas Goedert, I think he's safer than Devonta Smith, to tell you the truth, because I think they're still going to use him. And then at running back,
who knows?
Are we projecting? Is everyone, this is the most, it's funny because you have, everyone is like, yeah, you have the Miles Sanders truthers and they're like ostriches. Their heads are still in the sand. And this is when they should all be coming out and popping up, right? Contract year, they didn't go out and do anything crazy at the running back position, and we're not hearing anything about him. So we might actually get a decent value for him in redraft.
The only thing, and you would know better than I would, but I get the impression that this coaching staff just isn't that in love with Miles Sanders. I wonder if Gainwell gets just a little bit more run than he did last year. Honestly, he won't be a feature back, but enough to just kind of kill Sanders.
Well, none of the coaching staffs have been in love with Miles Sanders going back to Doug Peterson. So you see Miles Sanders touch the ball and all of a sudden he's got, you know, 8 carries in the first half for, you know, 74 yards. And it's like, bam, 2 more touches.
Yeah.
Oh, what happened there? Apparently he was gassed.
And part of the problem is that a lot of times it's 2 carries for 79 yards.
Right.
And 3 carries for -5 yards, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And that's a big thing with Miles Sanders. And they want some of those, like they had Boston Scott last year. So does Kenneth Gainwell slide more into that role now that he's got a year under his belt? I think he does. I think they utilize him more. And I think they're still probably going to run the ball enough where they can both be they can both have flex upside, even if Kenneth Gainwell. I think Kenneth Gainwell, there's going to be certain. I think he has flex upside there because I think you're going to be able to shift him into the slot as well. I think that's what they want to do.
And then Boston Scott gets the touchdowns.
Yes, he does, of course. Or, you know, we're going to sign Jordan Howard again and just.
They've got somebody. I can't put my finger on it. Maybe UDFA is a name.
And. I'm blanking on it as well, so that's
okay. I don't know who it is, but I know that last year it was Kerryon Johnson.
True. Oh man.
Well, then we had Jordan Howard came out of nowhere and he was actually running.
Well, in fairness, like Jordan Howard didn't come out of nowhere. He came out of like back to back 1,200-yard seasons.
It's just one of those like they need a banger, essentially, in that offense. And he was that.
But I think that's the problem for Sanders is if you're not the banger and you're not the pass catching back, then what are you?
Right.
Yep.
You're just the volume guy.
Right. Let's put a ball on this. Heath, wide receiver. I think you said you'd lowered AJ Brown, still kind of wide receiver one for you. Devonta Smith.
14 overall, so a borderline number one, yeah.
Borderline number one. Devonta Smith, borderline number two.
Or no, borderline number three.
Number three, and then Goddard, probably top six, seven tight end.
Yeah, I didn't drop Goddard much, and we've had some debate about that. I think the big debate right now is Goddard versus Dalton Schultz. And I'll probably stick with Goddard, but I don't have a strong lean either way. I'll take the guy that goes latest.
Yep.
Where do you have Goddard as opposed to Hockenson?
I do have Hockenson ahead of Goddard. I've got a little bit less confidence that Jameson Williams and Amon Ross St. Brown are going to negatively impact Hockenson this year as opposed to A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith.
Sure. Let's hit on some of these rookies. Your top ranked, talking about rankings here, your top ranked rookie was Garrett Wilson. And I think that's probably going to have to take into effect of a Zach Wilson leap, right? And that's something I think a lot of us are hoping for. When he gets that weapon, he gets Breece Hall. We have Elijah Moore healthy. We have Corey Davis coming back, right? How do you think Garrett Wilson falls in the target pecking order, and where do you have him roughly for those projections?
I have London as the lead target getter on this offense. I just think I've been a Corey Davis guy in the past, and I thought Elijah Moore was awesome for that fantastic month in 2021. Mm-hmm. But Garrett Wilson was my favorite wide receiver in this class coming into the draft. And I think he's better than both Elijah Moore and Corey Davis for sure. And so I expect him to eventually lead the team in targets. I don't know. It's interesting with this class, like how much of a leap does Zach Wilson have to take to be the best quarterback for one of these rookie wide receivers? I mean, other than Jameis, there's not Tannehill. We'll see what he is this year. He had a nice 3-year run, but kind of looked like he turned back into a pumpkin last year. So I think for any of these wide receivers to be top 25 guys, something kind of strange is going to happen in year one. I don't have any of them projected in my top 30.
Okay. Yeah. And listening back, I think that was a little bit lower than some of your counterparts, but not too much lower. It was, they all either fell into situations that are murky or the quarterback has questions. And so we hit that, and then right next to him was Treylon Burks. What are you thinking with a target share there? Because I feel like I did the same thing with A.J. Brown when he landed there, and Corey Davis was there. We know they're a run-first team, and I was like, man, I need to pivot off of him. And I'm trying to train myself to not do that when it comes to landing spot. But then everyone says, hey, he's not A.J. Brown, and I get a lot of those comments as well. So how do you balance that?
I don't think he's A.J. Brown, but – I do think he has a chance to, like, I think there's four guys really that have a chance to be the wide receiver one this year. And he's definitely in that group and probably second. I've got him at 117 targets over 17 games, which is just a little bit behind where I had Wilson or maybe right at. I don't have him quite as efficient as I did Wilson. It probably comes down to, is Robert Woods all the way back to being Robert Woods or not?
Yep.
Because if he's, and he's probably not at this age and coming off this injury, but if he's somehow peak Robert Woods, I think Burks has a hard time topping 100 targets in this offense.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's maybe the one positive we can say for Ryan Tannehill is he does get, you know, a healthy Derrick Henry back. I would assume that some of those struggles, especially with his touchdown percentage, that took a massive drop. He was right around, I think the previous three seasons, like you mentioned, he was right around that 6.5% TD rate. He kind of turns into the pumpkin. I'm going to guess some of that's attributed to Derrick Henry being out. So we see him back. I think that's going to be the thing maybe for Burks is that we know you have to be efficient in this offense and you have to score touchdowns. And that's how we saw AJ Brown be successful, because AJ Brown never got more than what, 102 targets, I think, was his top. And it was just this last year, and he played 13 games or something like that. So he's not going to be a huge target volume. It has to be efficient, and it has to be a touchdown guy to maybe be in that top 30 that, right, that you're not putting him at, because a lot of things have to go right.
Yeah. And we're talking about Vegas a little bit earlier on, and his over under is 869.5 there. And Cody, my prop talk buddy, really likes that under there. Heath, you have him projected a little bit higher than that, huh?
Well, yeah, and that's what I said. Like, if you're just looking at 17-game projections for everyone, you're going to be higher on most players, because there's going to be enough injuries to where these over-unders factor that in. But for a full 17 games, I do have Burks over 869. I think I have maybe my top four or five wide receivers over that. Definitely my top three, because like I have Burks, I think I had Burks at second amongst this class as recently as 4 or 5 days ago. Chris Olave actually just, I moved ahead of him with okay. How can Michael Thomas still have hurdles to overcome? He's played 6 games in the last 2 years.
Very wild. I think part of that is we saw that he had the struggles, you know, with the ownership. Hey, is he seeking a trade? Is he just sitting out? He gets the surgery in the middle of the season when he should have gotten it earlier, right? Like, there's a part of me that knows it's hey, I can't be the doctor from the sideline guessing how they're thinking, you know, mentally. But he's shown that he doesn't want to be there previously, and we have new coaching regime, not really regime, right? They're internal, but
right,
a new leader at the helm, and I think that's going to be a big change. And then even further, they're almost at this, and Walido's in the chat, he's a big Saints guy, so maybe he can push back on this, but I feel like they're right on the cusp of a rebuild. I don't know if you guys feel like that, but a lot of their players are older, and they're at that point where they feel like they could either jumpstart a rebuild, or they can try for one more year, get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, and then they are forced to do the rebuild. Do you feel the same way?
They are that team in your dynasty league that no one actually thinks is a contender except for them. They are in rebuild denial, and they're going to try to push it out one more year and see if they can make their rookie pick worse next year. No, I 100% agree with that. But I would also say, like, we were talking about who has the best quarterback amongst these rookies. I think it's probably Chris Olave. And I mean, it's Sky Moore, but assuming you don't count Sky Moore in that Christian class Watson, amongst the first round rookies, it's Chris Olave. But if there's no Michael Thomas, he would be my number one rookie wide receiver, because I've only got him 1 point behind Garrett Wilson right now.
And maybe that's, and again, we're kind of flirting between the projections for 2022 and how we view these guys as dynasty. For me, as a guy that was higher on Chris Olave than most of consensus, I almost feel like I'm not worried about that situation. I don't see Michael Thomas as long for the team, whether that's a trade at midseason or end of the season when they can move off his salary a little bit easier. I feel like Chris Olave is just poised to. If Winston isn't ready for the start of the season, which it sounds like he's going to be ready in about July, so we'll see about that progression. But they have Andy Dalton as the backup. That's a little kind of nugget that a lot of people forget. Andy Dalton's the backup, so I'm not concerned there. So from a redraft perspective, I love that you have him there. And then from a dynasty perspective, I know some people are kind of worried about his ceiling, but pro-ready, going to come in, one of the best route runners in this class. If you hit year one, I think that just – vault your dynasty value to where you can feel however you want about him. But if he hits like Amon-Ra St. Brown did year one, I don't care about these other narratives. You can move off him. And I did in a league because I didn't believe, you know, long-term, you can move off him just based on the dynasty value that hits year one.
Yep.
What about, so Chris Olave, just as we track here, you moved him up to 2 in the rankings, did you say, above
In the 2022 projections, I have projections. Him ahead of Burks now. Yeah.
Okay. So we've got Wilson 1.
Yes.
And then Olave, then Burks, and then I had Watson in the rankings. Is that where he kind of falls in next, or do you have London?
London in the redraft, and London's actually number 1 for me in my dynasty rankings. So I think it's tough because it's easy to look at that situation and think, well, he has the most opportunity. There's no other wide receivers there. But yeah. Kyle Pitts is still there, and Arthur Smith and Marcus Mariota are there, and that makes me think we're not going to have a 600-pass offense, even if they make the switch at some point. I just think they even last year, as much as they trailed situationally, they were pretty run-heavy. And I would imagine they'll trend that way again. And I think Pitts is still the number one wide receiver on that team. But long term, assuming that London gets a quarterback upgrade and one of the better quarterbacks next year, I think he could absolutely be a top 12 dynasty wide receiver relatively soon.
Yeah, I like kind of hitting those two guys together because they're kind of in similar situations in terms of the quote unquote vacated targets. I know there's a whole battle of, are they real? Are they not real? I'm on the side that they're definitely real. You have to be talented to earn them for sure. But there's a reason Amon-Ra St. Brown, you don't have to bring him up twice in a short span, but there's a reason he had this end of the year when Hockenson and Swift go down, the two top pass catchers. So I view that the same here for Watson, right? There's 241 targets gone between Adams, MVS, ESB. That's basically 60% of the targets are going to wide receivers in that type of offense. We have historical data on Rodgers. We know he's going to throw to them. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there for Watson. And then London, a different quarterback situation. But again, you're talking about no Ridley, no Gage. That's 146 open targets there. And then if you include Mike Davis, who oddly had 58 targets, I really didn't remember that, you know, coming to the end of the 2021 season. But that's 204 vacated targets. And what is Patterson going to do? Is he going to move more towards wide receiver? And maybe we can talk about that when we get to their rookie running back. But I just think there's a lot of opportunity for these two guys. And London, obviously, with the being the first one off the board, he's the one that's most exciting for me from a redraft standpoint. And then he was my number two in a tier with Burks as the 1-2 for me. And so he's going to be right up there in terms of rookies that I'm targeting.
Yeah, the only thing I'm concerned with was Watson. I mean, there's two things. It's the lower competition level. I think that always gives you a little bit less certainty about a player's actual ability coming into the NFL. And then it's just the, does Aaron Rodgers trust you? We know that he has trust issues in a variety of different senses. And so, especially like Amari Rodgers was a pretty decent prospect coming in last year and could not get on the football field. So I do worry a little bit for this year that it's Alan Lazard. That, man, how gross is that? The idea that like it might just be that Christian Watson is MVS and Alan Lazard's going to be the leading target getter. I actually think it might be that Aaron Jones is going to be the leading target getter. But
ooh, interesting, interesting. No love for there it is. I knew eventually.
Sammy what? Yeah.
week one, right?
At do least you
week
remember?
One. Yeah. Do you always remember always bet Sammy Watkins over always. For week one.
Can't wait to see the Packers week one schedule. I'm sure they've set him up for like a revenge game or something. But do you remember the article, the interview he did after the Super Bowl?
I do not.
The Lizard King one?
Yes.
Not.
Yes, you need to go back and just get a quick refresher on that and then imagine the locker room conversations that are going to happen between Sammy Watkins and Aaron Rodgers, and it's going to be fantastic.
Okay,
I'm just, marking the note. It's too bad that Hard Knocks is not there, but they could start a podcast and I would pay lots of money for it.
The Lizard King, man. Robbie,
I took a note.
I don't even
know. I'm diving in. Let's see what happens.
I just wow.
I don't know where it's going, so I'm gonna make sure I do it here at home and not at work. So
you know,
it's safe. It's safe. It's just, you know, you're probably gonna jump in a volcano or something afterwards. It'll be fine.
Just you have aluminum foil at your house, right?
Oh sure, yeah.
Yeah, just put some on top of your head before you read the article, just so nobody can read your thoughts.
There,
right.
Good
call.
Okay, so with all the pass catchers there, do you see Alan Lazard? Is he kind of the one you're projecting to lead the room, as we say? Because we're going to want somebody from this offense. Is it more of the I want to take whoever goes latest kind of situation, or are you saying there's going to be enough of a difference between Lazard, Cobb, Watson, Watkins, throwing Romeo Dubs that you want Lazard?
If I thought Lazard and Burks were going, or Lazard and Watson were going to go at a similar time, I would choose Watson just because of the upside. My expectation is Watson's going to go in like round 8. and Lazard's going to be there in the double digit rounds, and I would much rather draft Lazard.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Same. Okay, I agree. Let's hit on some more of these second round guys. Actually, one we have two first round guys we haven't talked about with Jahan Dotson, Jameson Williams. And I want to put George Pickens in this conversation because, again, I feel like there's similarities with especially Pickens and Jameson Williams. We're talking about questionable quarterback situations for the Pittsburgh. It's who's starting for the Lions. It's can he support all of these pass catchers. And then Jahan Dotson, if you look at Carson Wentz's wide receiver two history, I mean, it's wide receiver 87, 76, 66, 73. He had a wide receiver 22 year with Aguilar 1 year, but he doesn't support a second wide receiver like ever. So there's a little bit of concern for Jahan Dotson. How are you? Where are we at here in the pecking order?
Well, I mean, that's going to be the question. I think if I was a Jahan Dotson backer, I would say it sounds like bad news for Terry McLaurin because Dotson's got a better prospect profile than McLaurin did coming in for sure.
Not wrong.
And there's been plenty of talk about McLaurin and whether he's one of these guys with 1 year left in their contract that's not going to play for their team anymore. I think this year it's probably a tough path for Dotson unless something happens to McLaurin. You draft him in the double digit rounds. He's a wide receiver 4 or 5 type. And if we're wrong and Dotson just beats him out as a rookie, or if something happens to McLaurin and Dotson becomes the number one, then that pays off. In Dynasty, I think, like, I've still got Dotson very close, if not ahead of Watson and Sky Moore. I think the draft capital may win out. And I think Dotson may be the Washington Commanders' number one wide receiver as early as next year.
Sure.
Commanders, I still. You said Commanders. I was like, who?
I prefer football team.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that was, I think, that's the crazy. Best name they've had probably in franchise history.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about setting up a study group. It's like, all right, we're gonna do this for 2 years, and we're gonna come up with the Commanders.
Right.
They're different players, obviously, but I kind of view Williams and Pickens kind of similarly. I mean, Williams ahead of Pickens for sure, but I don't really want either of them this year. And I think they might both have the upside to be the best wide receiver in this class long term.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of people, I might not be on that train as much as others, but a lot of people are saying, hey, Jameson Williams needs to be talked about a lot more than he is. And I definitely think there's room for that conversation when we talk about dynasty and, hey, we're not looking at the situation right now, right? Like if he's good, he's going to score. And he is one of the best burners. He is electric. He has, when we talk about, I hate using the word upside. And I think I've heard you say this exact same thing because it can be construed in so many different ways. But the way I use it is you're very efficient with, you don't need volume. You can be efficient and you have good touchdown upside. And I think that's something that he showed in 1 year at Alabama, which can also be your knock, right? Coming from Ohio State, couldn't beat out Olave and Garrett Wilson. But when he got on the field with a good offense, he showed that he can be efficient with his targets and he can score touchdowns. And so there probably is a conversation, and that's why he's in my tier two of guys, is that I don't like his landing spot, but I'm trying not to let that sway me as I have in the past.
Yeah, and I think Pickens, I've said this and it's gotten me in trouble, but I've never really bought into the whole Deontay Johnson thing, which has been to my disadvantage the past 2 years. But I think Pickens has the most upside in that receiving core.
How dare now, you talk about Deontay like that?
I know. it's so rare to find a guy who can turn a target into 7 yards every time you give him one.
Was it Juju or Deontay?
Who is this?
Yes, I think Pickens has the most upside in that receiving core. I also think that if he doesn't find some way to put 20 pounds on, I'm not sure he can play in the NFL because he's not strong enough right now.
Yeah, that's the tough part for me. Like Pickens plays like he's Mike Williams size.
Yeah.
Or Mike Evans size, but he's not quite that, right? He's 6'2", 6'3", 195. And so the way he wins versus the way he'll have to play against NFL corners, yeah. I've seen him be an alpha, and I think he has that talent, but he's going up against bigger corners. And so I'm just I go back and forth on him a lot. That's why he won't be in the top six. I probably won't get any Pickens in my rookie drafts.
No. I'd rather get him at the start of round two, really. But you don't find him there very often.
No.
Yeah. When he was dominant, he was out there playing bully ball, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yet.
Any other – well, no, one other we need to talk about before we get to any other. We need to get to the one where you're probably the outlier, right? And I think you've acknowledged this, is that Sky Moore is not in the top 60 of your redraft rankings, I think. I saw he was absent when doing the control F. Where does he got him? This is a KC guy. That's what I kind of like. Hey, there's no bias for sure. Talk to us about – is he just the odd man out? When you look at Juju, Hardman, MVS, he's odd man out for year one at least.
I don't know that he's the odd man out for the entire year one, but I do think, like, when I looked at him before the draft, I loved his upside, and in his prospect profile, I wrote that the Chiefs were the best landing spot for him, but not because I thought he could land there and in year one be a dominant target earner. He's played wide receiver for 3 years in his whole life. I just don't think he's probably quite ready to contribute on a regular basis. He could be really helpful for the Chiefs. He might have a month-long stretch where they find a way to scheme him up and he's really good, but I don't think he's going to be someone who helps you in fantasy this year, at least not from week one.
Okay. Talk about
now, and I do think, like, long-term, his upside, because he has Mahomes, because of that situation, and because of his talent, I thought he had a ton of upside coming in. I think long-term he could be awesome. I'm not shying away from him in the first round of rookie drafts, but I don't think he's going to be a year one contributor.
Yeah, and that's the balance, right? We're doing a projections talk, and we're also looking at it from a dynasty perspective. Probably could have framed that a little bit better when I was putting together the show, but I think it's probably two good lenses to view it in, because a lot of this dynasty value is based off of year one. You know, you don't have to be a fantastic prospect to shell out in year one. You just have to have the opportunity and take advantage of it. So if there's a guy you're looking at, let's just talk redrafting your projections. Who's a guy that you think you're higher on than where he's been going as you've looked at either redraft rankings or versus Dave and Jamie, some of these other guys? Who's someone that you will maybe get in redraft for a rookie wide receiver?
I think the two, well, for redraft, one for redraft, one for dynasty. I think the one in redraft is probably Chris Olave, because I do have him so close to Garrett Wilson. And most of the rookie wide receivers seem to be going right around that round seven, round eight range, where I have both Wilson and Olave. The thing is that those two guys are going like third and fourth amongst the rookies. And so those aren't the guys going in round seven or round eight. So I'm taking my wide receiver one in the same round, just a different guy.
Yep.
And then for dynasty, it's Dotson. I'm still fine with him as early as 108 in rookie drafts. And I still think he has a relatively rosy future.
Cody Kutzer approved. He's a Penn State guy, so he's going to love hearing that. To wrap up the wide receivers so we can get on the running backs, anybody else that you're interested in or that you want to point out from a projections? Hey, this guy came in good on projections because of opportunity, targets, et cetera.
No, I don't think we've left anybody out in terms of the guys who projected inside my top 60. I do think both Tolbert and Mechie are interesting later round guys, round 13, round 14, round 15, just because – I mean, we don't know that Michael Gallup's going to be ready early in the year, and this Dallas offense figures to be a prolific one. And there's a big opportunity opposite Brandon Cooks in Houston.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, anything else on wide receivers?
No, let's do some running backs, baby.
All right. And this one maybe not as long, right, because it kind of tails off, especially if we're doing projections year one here.
Does it tail off, or is it just
– Kate, a chasm, just like, see ya.
Yeah. It's the Lizard King jumping into a volcano again.
I gotta look that up.
He did jump into a volcano, didn't he?
I gotta get on the inside of that. All right, so let's start off with Breece Hall. Obviously, the name that everybody's taking. If we're talking, I don't think it matters when everyone says, "Oh, you're talking super flex or single QB." I think a lot of people are taking him 101 regardless. You've been a guy that's really high on him. I think you, Tom, you pointed out that he said in startups, you read one of Heath's articles, it would take him. What was it? In startup.
In your rookie draft article, you said that he was a first round pick in a startup. So that's some heavy confidence in a rookie running back not named, you know, Jonathan Taylor coming in or something like that.
It's,
so
it's funny you would mention Jonathan Taylor because
I did it. Listen, there's the lob. All right.
Yes. I'm not saying he's Jonathan Taylor, but testing wise, production wise, if you're looking for a Jonathan Taylor comp over the last couple of years, he's the best one. And it's a really weird time at running back. We've got 7 or 8 guys who have been consensus top 10 running backs for the last 2 seasons who are 26, 27, 28 years old. We have a bunch of younger guys who we don't really know if they're going to be full-time feature backs. And I would include Javonte Williams, DeAndre Swift, both in that category. Like they're in everyone's top 5 at running back, but they might be 52% snap share guys for the rest of their life, for all we know. And then Najee Harris is the opposite. He got all the volume in year 1 and showed no justification for it. He was fine. There was nothing wrong with him, but he didn't do anything exciting. So, and he's 3 years older than Breece Hall. So I didn't really expect this when I was writing about Hall before the draft. I think I'd said that he will definitely be a top 12 rookie running back, maybe somewhere in the 6 to 7 range. But what I'd written was, if he's good for the first month of the season, Jonathan Taylor will be the only running back who ranks ahead of him. And then I went through my process once he got drafted by the Jets and all the other things that happened with everybody else. And he was number 2 at running back immediately. I'm okay with that. If you have a team that's trying to win the championship this year, then you should prefer Najee Harris. You should prefer Christian McCaffrey. You should prefer a handful of guys over Breece Hall. But weighing the future equally to now, I think Breece Hall is the second most valuable running back to me behind Jonathan Taylor.
So it's funny that we talk about that because I don't know how long that's going to last because we have Bijan coming in 2023, Travion. It's going to be,
I mean, legitimately,
yeah.
A year from now, you might not see Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott. None of those guys in the top 24.
Right.
They're all gone.
Right. Could be. And then we have all these running backs coming in 23 and then, you know, more 24. So it's funny. It's like this year's running back class is the calm before the storm. Next year, we're going to have running backs go in the first round of the NFL draft. If you have been looking at mock drafts, we were talking about the Eagles earlier. I'm seeing a ton of Bijan to the Eagles there. And if Hurts is there, that skyrockets his value because of the running game. But just to keep in mind that 2023 class there. But yeah, I like Breece this year.
I love the point that Rich Rebar made. I think I was on the podcast today, Heath, that we haven't seen a class that was as good as, I think it's the 17 class. Zeke was 16. That 17 class had 5 guys, McCaffrey, Fournette, Mixon, et cetera. We know the names, right?
And Dalvin Kamara.
Yeah, we haven't seen a class like that. And so now that they're all at that age, we think, oh, you know, 26, we need to drop them off. And I think for Dynasty, it makes sense, right? When we've got good talent coming in that's 5 years younger, especially that position, it makes sense. But in terms of if you have a talented team, Rich's point was, let's not move off these guys thinking that they're going to be bad when they're 27, 28, because people who have played Dynasty for more than, you know, the past 4 or 5 years, we've seen running backs that talent level that a lot of those guys, I would argue, are at be productive into year 28, 29, sometimes 30. And you see that drop off maybe a little bit later than your normal drop off. And there's probably a lot of analytics that argue against that because most running backs aren't that good.
The problem is, like, I think Rich is right for one or two of those guys. Which and like, you probably don't get to just roster all of them on your team and then profit on the one or two that he's right about. You've got to guess which one or two that's going to be. And I, like, none of them have given you any reason to be confident that it's them.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I think he's probably right. I think a couple of them are probably going to perform to 28 or 29 and we'll look dumb for where we ranked him 3 years prior.
I think we got to look at the skill sets. Like, Kamara is going to be valuable because he's going to catch the ball. CMC, if he stays on the ball or stays on the field, catch the ball. So yeah. I think those running backs are a little bit safer than, you know, Mixon can catch the ball. They just don't use him enough in that.
I think that type, that line of thinking is right. But if Christian McCaffrey gets hurt again this year, no one's going to listen to it. Because he's the exact profile that's not taking the hits from the big guys in the middle and supposed to be okay. And if he gets hurt 3 years in a row, then nobody's going to believe that.
It doesn't even matter if he's the type of guy that can take the hits in the middle field. I haven't seen more Saquon Barkley hate in my life than I have this year. It's like everyone's like, okay, it was the 1 year. Then it was like, okay, a year and a half. And now they're just, nope, this probably was an injury, but.
We've been doing this for like 2 years now, and I feel like I've given you enough Saquon hate that he's not going to stay on the field, that you've been prepared for this. I didn't do this for you.
More, Tom. More.
More. Yeah, I need to be the one. That's the one thing. If I have a dynasty, get better at. And Christian, if he's listening out there, he's always talking to me about it. Just pivot. Pivot to that younger back.
Yeah.
Pivot the 3 years, you know, Swift will hold the value, whether he's going to be that workhorse back or not, he'll hold the value until year 25, 26, and then you pivot back again. And that's always a thing that I struggle with because I'm like, no, Mixon's been good. He's produced for me this year. Like, I don't see it slowing down. And then it hits.
And the worst part is, because I've done this, I did this last year with a team that had been in the championship the year before, but it was just time. And I'm doing it this year with a team that was in a championship 2 years ago. Like, when you do the teardown, you're going to make trades that feel awful. And like, we'll just get roasted on Twitter if you put them on Twitter. No one likes rebuilding trades on Twitter.
Yeah.
But you just have to, like, you got to do it.
Yeah. No, I did, I moved Mixon last year and I got Javonte and a Devy pick, which I turned into Tank Bigsby. So
yeah,
I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, because I think you made the point that Javonte and Swift, are they ever going to be those guys? And one, I think the NFL doesn't want them to be those guys. So that's going to be part of it. And you'll see that a lot. And maybe if Najee had a competent backup, we wouldn't see that with him either, which is,
I think there are certain teams that very few, and maybe there won't be much longer, but there are a couple of teams left that want that.
Right. Not many, but yeah, there's a couple that value that. And if they still show enough, even with that limited non-bell cow workload, and they still have that young age, people aren't going to go away from Javonte. Even if he gets, he bumps up his numbers a little bit from last year, they're still going to be like, okay, this is the year that Delvin's gone. And then it's kind of like the last year is like, this is the Javonte Williams.
It was always Javonte week.
Yeah.
Well, is this when you trade him then? Is his value ever going to be higher?
Wow. Well, can I get, like, what can I have for him?
Let's talk. Like, I don't know. Are you trading Javonte for the one? What would you rather have, Javonte or the 101?
I would take Breece over Javonte.
Okay. Do you think?
And that's, I think most people would trade him for Breece. So
yes, right. I think that's not consensus. That's interesting for me. 101, which is I'm going to say is Breece.
Breece. Yeah, you're welcome.
I think I like Breece. I mean, I think Breece has been this guy for so long that people just got tired of that narrative. And then he went out and did amazing at the combine, and we're finding ways to tear down his amazing prospect profile. Like, I don't know. I agree that he's kind of put it together completely. So that's But then we go to the 102, right? This class, there's that drop off. That's probably where you're looking at the 2023 class.
Yep.
Well, so what if you take one of those older running backs like Mixon or Kamara and you throw in a 2023 first?
I'd rather have that than Javonte, for sure.
Yeah, I would say most 2023 projected early to mid, especially in Superflex, because of how many quarterbacks we're thinking at this time, can be franchise changing, dynasty roster changing. I think it's hard to turn that down in a super flex league. The idea of getting a franchise changing quarterback for sure. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's what we thought in 2021. And here we all are just hoping and praying. Okay. That's a great conversation. Breece Hall from projection wise and redraft wise, where do you kind of have him again? Just one more time, putting a bone on that.
Yeah. I'm not as bullish on him in redraft. He's, I think, running back 16. I said it in the article, it's not to keep bringing up Jonathan Taylor, but I think it's a similar situation. I project where I think they're going to finish for a full season. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a top seven running back in the second half of the season. And that's right. More valuable than a guy who's RB 16 all year long. So I'd be okay if you draft him a little earlier than where he's projected, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think with Breece, the tougher thing to project, I think he's going to get the rushing yards. Vegas has him at 830. I think he can top that pretty easily. It's the receiving that we don't know how to break that up yet with him and Michael Carter, because they're still going to use Michael Carter. It just depends on how much and the situation. Is Breece Hall going to get the opportunity to catch 50 plus balls?
That, and we didn't see Zach Wilson as Mr. Checkdown, right? Like, I'm curious, Heath, no. Your projections for receiving totals for either Breece Hall or Michael Carter. I don't know how much you took that into account, because for me, I haven't gotten that deep into it yet, but I don't know how much I'll project that target share to go to running backs.
No. Not this year. He got a little better at it when he came back from the injury than he was early in the year.
Got better a lot of things, right?
Right. And I would expect, like, I think last year Josh Allen threw 96 times to his running back. That was a career high. I would expect that each and every year Wilson's going to get a little bit, like, that's a skill we see quarterbacks develop over time, is learning not to get hit and just get rid of the ball to your running back. So I think that'll go up over time. This year, I'm pretty low on Hall receptions, but I kind of think it's a situation where early in the year, it's likely Carter playing on passing downs. I wouldn't be surprised if halfway through the year, they're like, why are we throwing the ball to Michael Carter when we have Breece Hall?
it happens every year, right? I mean, we saw it with Jordan Wilkins. We can't have Jonathan Taylor beat out Jordan Wilkins. We can't have DeAndre Swift beat out AP and whoever else they had. Like, it happens every year where you're like, you drafted this rookie.
Yeah, Akers and Darrell Henderson.
Yeah. It's just time after time. So let's put a lot of these other running backs in one clump and talk about which ones you think from our projections for 2021 you see as having a good opportunity, because I think that can really skyrocket their value. And if you like the player, keep him. If you don't, you can turn and flip for a better asset here in 2023. Kenneth Walker, Damian Pierce, James Cook, Rashad White, Tyler Algier. Let's just start kind of with that.
Yeah, I think projections-wise, I might have Damian Pierce the highest.
Really?
Which feels super gross, and I don't have Damian Pierce higher than Walker and Dynasty, but I just don't really believe that Marlon Mack or Rex Burkhead is going to stand in Pierce's way.
Why?
And I think it's possible in Seattle, especially with Pete Carroll as head coach, that Rashad Penny or Chris Carson does that for a little longer with Walker. I think eventually Walker probably becomes the lead guy, and maybe he's like a rookie year Cam Akers, where it takes until the last 5 weeks of the season before he's very good, but then he's obviously better than everybody else. Because I think he is, but I've got Pierce around RB30, and then Walker and Cook both around RB36. I think probably Buffalo's preference is that Devin Singletary will be the early down back. But if Allen continues on this trend towards throwing to his running backs more, and Cook is as special as he's looked, he might have one of those stupid good pass catching rookie running back seasons. and really surprise people, be a top 20 running back in PPR.
Yeah, I can definitely see that happening. I think what's interesting with Damian Pierce is that, yeah, talk about an open runway with him and Tyler Algier, except when we look from last year's rushing totals, and I get it, Damian Pierce could be better than all the names we just listed from the Texans roster, but their average, like 3.4 yards per carry, their yards before contact was lowest in the NFL. Like, I don't really care who's in that backfield. The line can't, and they went with a guard in the first round, so that should help. But I don't know if that offense, A, produces any touchdowns on the ground, which they didn't last year. I mean, their leading rusher was Burkhead with 400 and some yards, and they all averaged 3.4 to 3.2 yards per carry. So that's where I'm – opportunity maybe, but production –
it's probably a good time to just admit that I have, for some reason, an expectation that both the Texans and the Lions are going to be better than everybody thinks they are.
Dan Campbell stand. You got a Dan Campbell stand right there, Tom.
No, I'm okay. I'm okay with the Lions being better.
Yeah.
It's Houston where it's – and that's where we talked about Pierce. It's game script. Are they going to be behind and have to throw the ball a lot?
I don't think they're that awful, and I don't think that division's very good.
Yeah,
they're not that awful.
I don't think they are.
Yeah, well,
I told you. Yeah. when they end up like 7-10, remember this.
Mark it
seven
down.
7-10.
Marking the tape. I love it.
We're going.
I didn't know we were getting in the hot take section. That wasn't even on the show sheet, but I'm in.
I suppose I have to go over to DraftKings and see what their over under is and put a bet in for you.
I'm gonna guess it's 4.5.
Yeah, I was going to exactly. Probably 4.5, yeah.
Going back to Kenneth Walker, I'm not sure if Carson plays. I just what Pete Carroll keeps saying, and as much as we trust Pete Carroll, right. He just doesn't sound confident. And if anything, you should trust Pete Carroll when he doesn't sound confident because he'll tell you when he's overconfident. And he's just been cautious. I think he just came out today and said, there's been no change to the timetable. We're not sure when we're going to see him. We're not sure. And it's like, I don't know if that's a roadblock for Walker. And then it's Penny who – again, we've talked about we're not going to project injury on anybody, but if you make the exception for Will Fuller and you make the exception for – I forgot the other name. It's like Penny's right on that edge of making exceptions for, right? So
yes.
That's maybe why I think Walker will be kind of that next favorite. And in redraft, he'll be the next one off the board, I'm sure.
Tom, are we on the over in 4.5 yet?
It is 4.5, and the over is plus – 125. The under is minus 150.
We are just giving away free money on the show tonight.
I will say Detroit is at free money. Detroit is at 6.5.
I think they definitely have an opportunity. They got better on both sides.
I like both those overs, but I would take the plus money on Houston over 4.5 before I'd take Detroit at 6.5.
Well, here's another one. The Jets are at 5.5. The over is at minus 145.
Dolphins are looking a lot better. You got Patriots. That's just a lot of tough in conference. One other running back I want to get to, Tyler Algier, because we talked about, I think you talked about, hey, they can be this running team still. They did run the ball a lot. Is that kind of going towards his projections? Have you changed him since they cut Mike Davis? Has he bumped up or is he just, hey, let's see what happens with him and Patterson?
No, I had this pool of touches for running backs that like Mike Davis and Damian Williams were swimming in together. And I think that there is a chance for Algier to be much better in his rookie year than he is as a dynasty asset. And I think this is just one of those situations where we have to watch for if that shows itself to be true, then it is time to trade him in Dynasty.
Yeah.
If you're able to get something for him more than what you paid for him in the middle of this season, then count that as profit and don't push it too far is my thought. Because I think he might, like maybe he'll turn out to be a borderline number two, but I don't think he's going to be a long-term asset.
Day three running backs, right? That's your cutoff. And maybe round four, we've kind of seen them turn into the new kind of end of round three. But, yeah, those day three running backs are a dime a dozen. You just don't find a ton.
Look at Michael Carter. Last year I was a huge advocate for, take Michael Carter in your rookie drafts towards, end of the first or early second, and then flip him in the middle of the season and try and get a first round pick this year or 2023 or something like that. So, and then we saw what happened with Breece. So day three running backs.
Day three running backs. That's how we end this glorious show. Day three running backs. Heath, thank you for jumping on with us, man. It was really good. We not only kind of hit projections, but dynasty talk and kind of strategy a little bit there in the middle of it. Is there anything that you're working on that you want to promote? I know we've got Scott Fishel coming up. I know you're really big into doing the Toys for Tot. You do the shopping for that a lot. Anything that you just want to toss out there for the folks?
Yeah, keep an eye out for the Fantasy Cares Eliminators. I believe John Bosch is firing those up this week or next week.
Great.
The best, I think, way to help raise money for the Fantasy Cares mission. It's been one of the best things I've got to do through my job in this industry is do the shopping trips for Toys for Tots. And a lot of the money that comes from that comes either through Fantasy Cares Eliminators or the Podathons. So if you can find a way to participate in those, you'll feel better because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's toysfortots.org, or you can go to the scottfishbowl.com. They've got a lot of good links there on the website. And then if anybody needs to figure out how to get into these John Bosch eliminators, I'm lucky enough to have taken over some John Bosch leagues. He keeps on dumping them so we can focus more and more on these. So I've got a lot of his dynasty bankroll leagues. We can get you in touch and do that. So reach out to, I'm at NFL Robbie, Tom's at Dynasty Infidel. And then Heath, thank you so much for jumping on with us. You're at Heath Cummings Senior. So that's Cummings plural with another SR at the end on Twitter. We got to brush off the Insta game. We got to get a new tweet up there, see if we can get one in this year, 2022. Maybe an IPA, toss that one up there.
I'll tell you a funny story as we close out about the Instagram. My son might have more followers on Instagram than I do, but he just puts his basketball highlights on Instagram. And he had this clothing company that recently reached out to him and asked him to be an ambassador. And I was kind of laughing about it. And he said, I just have to buy two things from them. And then I get a code and I can sell them to other people. I was like, well, I think that's the way Instagram works. So congratulations.
Yeah. There you go.
You are a promoter. You are an influencer. Love it. Tom, anything else?
No, thanks for coming on, man. I know Robbie is slightly obsessed with you. It's always Heath. He loves you. I'm just glad you're not like in the same state as him anymore. I know you moved away from Kansas, right?
This is a tough, like, Tom, you're kind of like rubbing some salt in an old wound.
I didn't know that.
Rip the Band-Aid off first, but I tell people I'm from the Kansas City area. Yeah. And so, like, everyone, even people who've known me for the 7 years that I've lived here, like, you're from Kansas, right? No. The Kansas City that you all know is not in Kansas.
Yeah.
It's in Missouri.
Ooh. Yeah.
There is a Kansas City in Kansas. There's a racetrack there. And other things.
Yeah.
But the baseball team, the football team, they're both in Missouri. My home was in Missouri. Now, me taking offense at this is tongue-in-cheek because I was a Kansas Jayhawks fan my whole life. I lived much closer to Lawrence than I did to Columbia. But
that
was
the confusion on my part. I really apologize.
People ask me if I'm from Missouri or Missouri, and that says, well, it depends on whether you live down in Springfield or not.
There's a southern
part of the state, it's Missouri.
We always get a... it's a divorce lawyer ad on one of the sports networks. And he goes, we have lawyers everywhere except Missouri and Ohio.
You got to have different lawyers. If you've watched Ozark, that's why you need different lawyers in Missouri. It's a thing. Okay. Well, cool. We're pumped to have you on. Excited to kind of see where these projections go because they're not done. You update all the time. You update in season, which is just bonkers. So really appreciate being able to kind of check those out for Heath, for Tom. I'm Robbie Jeffries, and we'll catch you guys next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.